24/7 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. It is Thursday, the 26th, and I sure do appreciate you being with us today. I got a great show for you. First up, we're going to learn about something that just blew me away. Claire Atkin is with us to talk about ads and how they end up in bad places. After that, Wayne Elliott is with us, our favorite environmental entrepreneur. So it's a great cram-packed show. We're going to jump right in. Here we go. Let's get started right now. We all live on ads. It is the life, breath, soul of the entrepreneurial startup. We got to run some ads to get the business. What if your ads are in places you don't like on the wrong politician's website? Oh, can you imagine anything worse than being on that guy, that woman's website? Or even worse, you know, something that's inappropriate for children and you're running a children's ad. Whatever, you get the idea. Our next guest is making this problem become aware to us. I really wasn't even aware, and is presenting a solution. Please welcome Claire Atkin. She is the co-founder and CEO of Check My Ads. They are having an incredible impact with pioneering new policies to help introduce brand safety and awareness into the space. She has been featured on CNN, Forbes, New York Times, Washington Post, Bloomberg, MSNBC. Basically, we're the last person people to get her. Claire, welcome. How you doing?
I'm so great. Thank you for having me.
All right. So did I describe the situation fairly accurately? How did I do?
It's accurate. You know, advertisers are not in control of where their ads go on the internet. And it's surprising to everyone, but it's causing a lot of chaos. So we're here to fix it.
All right. So when I go and buy an ad package, what do they promise? What are the guarantees, or do they even discuss where the ads go? Because I've bought ads before, and, you know, we were trying to appeal to kids. So we were on the Discovery Channel and National Geographic, you know, and that kind of thing. I thought I had control, and then, you know, we didn't get very good response from the first ads, and we learned that they aired at 4 a.m. Talk to me about sort of a basic ad purchase conversation, please.
So most people don't know that advertisers do not put ads on the internet themselves. They have to get technology companies to do that for them. So if an advertiser wants to go onto a newspaper, like a physical newspaper, or even like a cable show, they know exactly where that ad is going to run. But on the internet, because we have something called programmatic advertising, we have middlemen. And I mean thousands of middlemen who are doing this work on our behalf. And they've created this sort of daisy chain where you give your ad campaign to one company, and then they give it to the next company, they give it to the next company, they give it to the next company, and then it ends up on the website. So it's no wonder this industry is out of control.
Can't you go directly to a website and buy ads directly from them? I've done that. Or is that a, you know, kind of unusual circumstance?
You know, you can buy ads in all kinds of ways, but some ways are easier than others. So if that website has a sales team, if they're ready to receive your ad, they can take that phone call and put it on the site. They have the technical proficiency to do that. They can. Unfortunately, not all websites have that. And advertisers don't always have the capacity to make those phone calls. It's much easier to just press a few buttons.
Right. So who are the big players, like, you know, your General Motors or IBM? Who are the companies they call to place thousands and thousands of ads? I don't even know the names of those companies. Who are we talking about? Who are the big players in that space?
Yeah, nobody really thinks about it. But these companies, they are controlling everything that we see and who gets to do business on the internet. Okay, these companies are very powerful. The largest one you've definitely heard of, Google. Google has Google Ads, and they are the largest by far. But there are others. PubMatic, The Trade Desk, Magnite, Triple Lift. These are all ad tech companies whose job it is to traffic control ads, money, and data around the world.
Okay, so are there contentious ads that they sell and then just bury on purpose?
Oh, there's all kinds of nefarious things happening in this industry. The ads themselves have quality issues. The websites where the ads get placed have massive quality issues. And the actual traffic controlling, you know, deciding whether an ad will be shown on a website or will get blocked, also has a consequence of this, is that there is a lot of chaos. There are a lot of lies and scams and manipulation, disinformation, you know, election chaos, polarization. All of this is because we have a media ecosystem, a media industry that is just chaotic. It's internationally unregulated.
So what? Give me an example of something egregious that happened because of this, Claire. Why is this? Tell me a horror story. Make me scared.
Oh, well, you know, a couple of years ago, Steve Bannon was calling for the beheading of Dr. Fauci, and it was sponsored by Tide. You know, that shouldn't have happened. Or
that's what
international
Tide wants. I know the people over at Tide. They're all in on beheadings over there. I'm teasing Procter & Gamble. Is Procter & Gamble owned Tide?
That's right. Yeah. And they're the largest advertiser in the world. You know, they spend about $11 billion per year on advertising. They don't want their ads anywhere near things that give people the ick, let alone the beheading of one of the most influential doctors in America. So they know that they shouldn't have been there. They were surprised that they were there, and they fixed the problem once we uncovered it. We could also go internationally. You know, I'm sorry to bring this up because it's terribly violent and terrible, but there was race riots all over the UK just a few weeks back because of a website that lied about a Muslim who had stabbed children. There was no Muslim who stabbed children. Okay, it was completely made up. And this lie was funded by charities and by major corporations in the United Kingdom. And unfortunately, it led to real death, you know, and destruction, real political violence. So we have to clean this up because the ads are funding a lot of bad things.
Now, where did that originate? I've heard about these huge disinformation houses in Russia and North Korea, Iran. Where did that story start?
That was just on a website called Channel 3, and it was just a regular disinformation website. There, you know, it doesn't.
Channel 3. Like, I'm sorry to interrupt. That's a legit website, right?
No, Channel 4 is legit,
okay,
but I don't think.
Okay. Channel 3 is what then? Just a lie factory?
You know, I wouldn't categorize it as a lie factory necessarily, but there are so many websites out there who realize that they can make more money if the things that they say are fearful, if they're fear-mongering, or if they're surprising in a way that hits our amygdala, I don't know much about the brain, honestly, but it's it'll hit our center where we think, oh, we have to protect ourselves. So that fear mongering makes us click, and the click makes us go to the website and get served ads. Well, that makes the website a lot of money, and it's why we're experiencing such chaos these days, is because the wilder the headline, the more likely we are to click on it.
All right, and we're not just talking about clickbait, the 7 celebrities that regret doing nude scenes or something like that, right? We're talking about much more nefarious than that, right? I mean, there's 2 categories here, the clickbait and then the dangerous. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say it's all part of the same problem, you know, because advertisers don't want to be on clickbait sites either. And the fact that they are should surprise everybody. You know, advertisers, I know that we can be nihilistic about this, you know, but the advertisers that I know and all the Fortune 500 companies and even in the tech marketing industry where I'm from, they don't want their ads on places that don't serve their brand, you know, that do not uplift their brand in some way. So what we're dealing with is a system where the advertisers do not have control, and we need them to get back control.
I would agree with that. All right. Tell us about what you're doing now as the CEO of Check My Ads. What are you doing? How do y'all solve this?
Right. So we've spent years playing whack-a-mole, you know, figuring out how did an ad get to a place and how can we make sure that it doesn't get there again? Well, what we've uncovered is different ways of seeing how the internet works. And the most important thing to know is that it looks so much like a financial market. It looks like a stock exchange. Also, it looks kind of like a supply chain. You know, you've got a lot of companies in a row and they're all acting as middlemen. Well, as soon as you figure that out, then you know what to do. And you know what to do because we've regulated the financial market. We've regulated supply chains. And now we're looking at California and New York and Brussels and Ottawa and, of course, the federal level of policymakers to say, hey, listen, we don't have to live in chaos. You know, we can turn the volume down by about 80% if we give advertisers back control over their own ad campaigns, and we can do that with regulation.
All right. I'm not a regulation type guy. I'm a market guy, but sounds like we need some regulations to me here. Even I'll buy into that. What kind of regulations that do what? You know, what about just put me in charge and I'll decide and I'll do that for you for a small fee and I'm not biased in any way. There you go. Solution.
That's the solution, isn't it? I always knew that if I just made the right phone call to the right radio host, then I would have the answer.
Too. My prices would be very reasonable, like $1 million a month or something like that. And for that, you can get, you know, like 20 hours a week almost.
Let's talk about what we shouldn't regulate. You know, I don't think it's necessarily appropriate to regulate what we can say.
Good. Thank you. I agree.
I want free speech, you know, and I don't necessarily think that we should be going after companies and saying you have to advertise here and you are not allowed to advertise here.
I agree.
So the thing that we are fighting for is for advertisers to have the right to choose where their ads go.
Isn't that a market solution? Shouldn't I, as a company, Claire, you and I start a company today that says we are betteradplacement.com and we guarantee your ads will only be placed where you want them to be. And you and I would make a fortune. Why isn't this a market solution?
Right. I mean, there are lots of companies that compete on that promise. And what we see over and over again is that the financial incentives to tell the truth and to give advertisers full transparency into where their campaigns go, they, you know, the full report about where exactly the ads went and at what time they were loaded, just are not there. We need to change the incentives. And this is a problem that has come up in every industry. Okay. Let me give you an example. In the 50s and 60s, people were buying cars en masse. Okay, there was a massive push. We were all moving out to the suburbs. We're all buying cars. Well, there was a trope that developed about a car dealer. And it said that car dealers were not to be trusted because they would sell you a lemon, a car that didn't work. Well, that trope developed because car dealers were middlemen and they were able to lie about the quality of the car that they were selling. We don't have that problem anymore. When you buy a car new off the lot, you know it's going to work. And you know that you're protected by a consumer law called the lemon law. If you buy a lemon, if you buy a car and you got to take it into the shop a few too many times within a certain period, you get your money back because it's considered a lemon. And that's a state law that we developed because it was because middlemen were such a problem.
State or federal?
The Lemon Law is a state law.
But every state adopted it.
Yes, that's right. And the mileage law is an interesting one, too. So the mileage law is about fraud. There's lots of fraud in ad campaigns. Well, there's fraud also in car dealing. You know, if you tamper with the mileage, it's hard to tell if someone's tampered with the mileage of your used car. But if you find out, that person goes to federal prison because it's a federal crime. So they've raised the bar of consequences for fraud. We don't have anything like this in digital advertising. It is completely unregulated, which is why there are so many things that go wrong.
Well, federal prison is a lot better than state prison, Claire. They're a lot more comfortable.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah, they are. Oh, for sure. For sure. You would rather go to federal prison than Mississippi state prison, I promise you.
All right. Well, I'll break the mileage law before I break the lemon law then.
All right. So what would you propose then? A federal law, or are you going to fight for a series of state laws? How do you want it done?
So in this industry, there is a lot of what we call low-hanging fruit, okay? Because it's completely unregulated. It's also, by the way, the second largest industry in the world for organized crime because of the level of fraud and money laundering. Okay, so let me bring this home. Drug trafficking is the largest industry for organized crime in the world. Digital advertising is the second.
Wow.
Isn't that nuts? We need to change this. And the way that we change this is that we really need to regulate it as best we can, where there's so much low-hanging fruit. So right now, Check My Ads is socializing these frameworks to lawmakers around the world. And we're saying, listen, whoever's first can be that person. And we will make sure that it happens everywhere. Because the internet is going to run amok if we do not fix this. Advertisers are being taken for a ride. You know, the news media is being decimated, just decimated because they don't have revenue. That makes no sense. This is almost a $1 trillion industry. And consumers are not getting what we want.
All right. So we have to solve this at the middleman level. Are those legitimate American companies that we can go after, or are those illegitimate foreign players?
Both. The largest ad tech companies in the world are American, and they do need to be brought to heel. There is currently a massive sort of world-shaking trial that nobody's really talking about between USA and Google Ads right now. The Department of Justice brought it. It's called an antitrust trial, so a trial about how Google is a monopoly within this industry. And we are reporting on that daily because we have our director of intelligence in the courtroom. But there are many, many thousands of other ad tech companies in the world. And let me tell you something. Advertisers don't know who owns those companies. They don't know where they're located, and they don't know where they bank. So these companies are collecting all the money they want and distributing all the money they want with no oversight at all, not from governments and not even from their advertiser clients. So that's something that we'd like to switch up real quick. We need to know who we're doing business with.
Yeah, the whole Google do no evil thing was just hyper ironic, I think. So,
it's really too
bad. I
like
your little laugh there. That was made me feel like you were on my side. You agreed with me.
I do agree with you. I think that, you know, the incentives are such that you're going to cheat your way to the top as best you can when you're in that kind of position. And there has to be a reckoning, and there is currently being a reckoning. So if you want to check that out, we have a website going. We're called Check My Ads. The website, you can go to checkmygoogle.com, and that's where we have daily updates about the trial. And I don't know, it's really for anyone who wants to know what's going on, because we're there every day.
What do you think is going to happen there in that trial? What should the judge's decision do? How do you break Google up fairly, or what is the solution for Google?
Yeah, really, the question is...
Let me interject just a second. You're young, right? I'm maybe 20, 30 years older than you. The last time the United States did this that I can remember, that I know of, was when they broke up AT&T. And they said you had a monopoly and they forced it to break up. They did it on geographical basis. And so we ended up with Bell South and New York Bell or New York something, or, you know, it ended up with regional players. In the end, the regional players couldn't compete. And so you ended up with regional monopolies. The problem got worse. Consumer power went down. Actually, it ended up being a bad thing. And the only thing that saved it was the new technology of the cell phone was sort of able to kill it. And AT&T ended up going out of business because of the cell phone, and Bell South bought it. And now AT&T is what used to be Bell South. And in the end, the consumer ended up losing, even though the desire was to make it all better. And the only people who won were the lawyers and then Wall Street, because now they were able to divvy the companies up, and they all did really well as stock plays. And there was a lot of ambiguity about how fair a lot of it was. And the last time the United States tried this didn't go so good. So having said all of that, what's your thoughts?
Wait, do you work for Google?
God, no, I hate Google. I'm totally serious. I would like to work for Google. Google, if you're listening, I will gladly accept your monthly sponsorship and I will talk good about you. But no, I do not have any sponsors that affect my views in any way. The only company that we get money from is Strauss Naturals, and that's because we're writing a book on their amazing entrepreneurial founder, Wayne Elliott, who is the guy who battery recycling would not exist in the world if it weren't for him, and no one in the world knows that. And so I'm in his pocket, but I like it there. He's a good person, and battery recycling wouldn't exist if it were him. But no, Google can go screw themselves.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you to that man. So the antitrust question of is antitrust good or bad is the wrong question to ask. The question has to be, we have this tool set. When is it appropriate to apply? And how can we apply it responsibly? Well, in this case, what we're dealing with is a rapidly changing technology landscape. You know, we've got the innovation of AI coming down the pikes real quick, and a company that has taken control of the buy side, the advertiser side of the industry, the sell side, the publisher and website side of the industry, and the ad exchange. So if you were running a football game where you owned both teams and were the referee, would that be a fair game for anyone else to play? No, it wouldn't. And that's exactly what we're seeing here in the ad tech system. We have a monopoly power that is self-dealing in a way that looks like, to many people, as uncompetitive practices. That means that it's not just unfair to people who are also doing business alongside them, like their technological competitors, but also to advertisers, also to the news media. You know, the news media is the way it is today because these technology companies have seized control and, more importantly, seized a lot of money from them. So there has to be some kind of accountability. Antitrust is one of the things that we have in the toolbox.
Claire, I love the issue, and let me just say this. You're a damn good spokesperson. You've given great answers. You're not hemming and hawing around it. You're not giving me political BS like from a talk sheet. You're a great spokesperson, and I feel good that you're leading this fight.
Thank you. It's really wonderful to be here. I love the questions. And, you know, I think this industry is shaping our entire world as we know it. And we need to spend a lot more attention on it. I think that we can fix the internet and fix a lot of society in the process.
How do we find out more? Get on your team.
please go to checkmyads.org. That's checkmyads.org and sign up for our free newsletter. Donate if you want to. We're a nonprofit, a C3, you know, nonpartisan. We're here to fix the internet. And we love our checkmates. Those are people who support us monthly. And when they support us monthly, we're in contact with them. They get a special sort of secret private newsletter where they get updates on the team. And we're all in this together, you know, and we gotta work together on this. So I appreciate anyone who comes to visit and comes to say hi.
Claire, thank you so much for being on the show. Great job of representing your cause, and we would love to have you back.
Thank you so much.
We're out of time, but you know what we do. That's right. We come back tomorrow. Be safe, everyone. Take care and go make $1 million. Bye now. We are back. And again, thank you so much for being with us. Excited now to welcome back to the show our great friend, Canadian entrepreneur, Wayne Elliott, also lover of the environment. No one has done more than him to actually make the environment a cleaner place. Here we are jumping into a conversation Wayne and I are having about a book that I'm writing on him. Here we're going to join the conversation already in progress. What'd you think of the first chapter of the book?
Yeah, I liked it. Some really interesting comments you made there. I thought it was good.
Glad to hear that. That makes me happy.
Yeah, I liked it, Jim. I'm going to, if it's all right with you, I'll be home within a month, and I'll get at these pages.
Okay, that sounds good.
Excuse me. I'll get at these pages about the product. Get that to you too sweet then.
All right. Well, we're in good shape. I think it's going well. I have, 60 or 70% done, somewhere around there. So I'm making good progress writing almost every day.
Excellent.
And I love, I personally.
We're still on the stores tour.
How are the meetings going? And I want to ask about the cost of this trip. So you're spending the night in the hotel every night. Driving.
Yeah.
What about the economics of the trip? Why don't you tell me some of that, Wayne?
Yeah, well, we're giving product to every store. In terms of what it would cost the stores for these products, it's $200 to $300 value to them. And we'll be not counting wages for the two of us, but fuel and car and hotels and meals. It'll be probably $60,000. It'll be pretty close to that by the time we're done.
And you'll mark that as a marketing expense, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's a write-off, all right, but we're being very well received. It's a bunch of the nicest people that you could ever meet. You'll find in these natural health stores. They're just wonderful people. Nobody's there for the big money or to get rich. That's for sure. And they're all just very nice, caring people. So that's been a pleasure at virtually every stop. And I think it's going well. Really, it's. Many are commenting they don't see company representatives anymore since COVID. Everything seems to be remote and telephone and computer, you know, and that's a bit of a shame. We've lost a lot of that face-to-face meetings, which I've always believed in. You know, it's always nice to put a face to a name and actually meet people. So that part's been going very well. We'll see if it's affected business much at the, you know, when we see results over the next few months. But I'm very glad we're doing it, and so nice to meet all these people.
What is your sense of the status of the retail industry? I've asked you this before, but You've been out on the road talking to a bunch now. Are they scared? Are they worried about a recession? Are they worried about online sales killing them? What are you hearing about the level of confidence out there?
I would say in the majority of retailers, Jim, in the majority, they're concerned. Comments like the heyday is over, if there really was a heyday, but the things are slower. There's no question that online and Amazon has taken business from most everyone. Now there are also some that say it's great. The business is good. I think the geography, the number of stores in an area, all has something to do with it. And some people's business has picked up because other health stores have closed, in the same town or city. So I have a lot of mixed reaction, but no question that since COVID, things have changed, the buying habits. And, you know, so many people now, I think there's very few people who are not buying something from Amazon or routinely buying it delivered to their door, you know.
Well, it's so convenient. My wife is addicted. Amazon comes 3 or 4 times a day to our house, it seems. So,
wow. Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, when you all the things you have to order, dog bones, for example, you know, it's just easier to get it there. And, you know, it saves a trip, saves carrying that big bag, and price is probably a dollar or two cheaper than the grocery store or the pet store. So, you know, eventually everything gets bought that way. We buy all of our toilet paper there. You know, what's really, I think, interesting is we're a big Costco family. Do you have Costco up there where you are, Wayne? Are you familiar?
Yeah, yes, we do. Yeah.
We are pretty quickly stopping Costco and just switching that to Amazon and having, you know, 100 rolls of toilet paper delivered at once, and we have enough storage space to keep it, so it's not a burden. And I don't know.
Right.
We haven't been to Costco in a month. So,
well, you know, it's not surprising. I think people always related Amazon and maybe some other big box store selling online that it was cheaper. I heard that for quite a while, that, oh, you save money and it's delivered to your door. Well, the people at Amazon aren't stupid. I mean, let's face it, it's all about the money. Any big corporate tells you there's any other factor, it's not true. It's 100% about the money. Employees, all that stuff, way down the line. There's no nameless, faceless numbers. But it's not because they have this advantage now, everyone using Amazon delivered to their door, they keep raising prices.
Exactly.
So you're taking the natural health business now, it isn't cheaper, it's $2 to $5 per item more. But, you know, they're testing the water, I believe. How much will people pay extra for the delivery to their door in a day or two? And I think they'll continue to raise prices until their business stops growing. So that's just my belief. But, oh, yeah, it's all about getting as much money from you as possible. Never think it isn't. They could care less about your convenience or anything else. It's about taking your money. And so they'll continue to raise prices. I personally hope people are paying attention to that and start to reverse some of these trends. I know in Canada, the small retailers, the mom and pop shops, were always considered the backbone of our economy. And they've certainly been crippled by Amazon. A couple of years ago, I gave our staff a significant amount of money, $1,000 each, to not shop on Amazon for a month.
How'd it go?
It cost them, well, I don't know. It cost me $250,000, and I don't know if anybody change their habits or not, but that's how strongly I felt about it, you know. And I get it. Let's face it. It's convenient. You don't have to go out in the car. A lot of people, older folks, maybe don't drive anymore, so it was a natural for them, saving the effort. But it does bug me that the rest of the world is doing it, to be honest with you. I've not done it, and I don't plan to. I'll go out and get what I need.
There is a great app, or actually an extension to your browser by Capital One, the people who make the credit card that Samuel L. Jackson does all of the ads for. And right. It is a price shopping guide. And every time you are in a shopping cart about to make that purchase, it goes out on the internet and does a price comparison for every product in your shopping cart and tells you where it's cheaper. And it's a free extension, totally free, by Capital One. And you can get it on the App Store. Just type in Capital One and search for it, and it will go right to it. And it's a great app. Consumer Reports rated it the number one financial app out there. And so just recommending that to everybody. I do use it, and it does find better deals every single time. And it's free.
I'm gonna spread the word on that. I hope everybody does it. And I mean, this guy started out selling books. He's now one of the wealthiest men in the world, and you know, does want to take more of your money every day. There's no doubt about that. And so, yeah, it's a hell of a trend, really, with the way things are going.
In the book about you, Wayne, well, I guess we should call it the Wayne book. I talk about Bezos and make a little bit of fun of Amazon. You know, they're trying to reduce their carbon footprint and be a good company in terms of environment and all of that. And at the same time, again, back to those boxes. How many boxes do you think Amazon uses a week? You know, it's probably 500 million or something like that. And I made a joke in the book that every year they have to cut down the entire Amazon rainforest to make boxes for Amazon.
Right.
What are your thoughts on the environmental hypocrisy of a company like that, saying we're going to be a huge supporter of the environment, and at the same time shipping a half billion boxes, whatever, a month, a quarter, whatever it is. I mean, my God, they must be buying more boxes than any other company in the world. What are your thoughts on that hypocrisy?
Well, I don't know. You know, I suppose there's other sales outlets that they use boxes as well. But you're right. They do have to put everything in a cart, and it can't just come loose. So, I mean, that's one of the downsides, I suppose. The people in the cardboard business would say, you know, of course, it's great for business. I don't like as well some of the things. For example, Amazon has bought, I think, 50% of a truck manufacturer in Quebec, Canada, the province of Quebec. And there are, I guess, thousands of people, Jim, who are making a living delivering Amazon products. I know a couple of fellows in our little town who, you know, started out with one van, and then they got two and a third van. Well, Amazon, in the end, does intend to deliver everything themselves. When they bought this company, part of the deal was a 5,000 truck order, and I believe it's something like the 5,000 trucks every year for the next 5 years. So they are going to, in the end, or gradually kick all these people out who have started small businesses, delivery services. And why? Because they want that money for themselves, right? They don't want to leave any money on the table or for anyone else to make any money. So they've they bought into this trucking company in Quebec and maybe others, I don't know, but, and it was kind of hush hush because, you know, they need delivery services right now. And, so, you know, it's, I guess it's the Walmart thing. They would like to sell you everything that you buy. And I guess there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that I like to support the mom and pop shops. You know, I do believe they were always the backbone of our country and probably the United States as well. Hire a couple of staff, a couple of part-timers, you know, their jobs there. So anyway, it's just, I guess it's a personal peeve. Obviously, it's not one I'm going to win. That's for sure.
Nope. What about, I mean, you're a capitalist, Wayne. You believe in free markets. Should we do anything to limit the size of these companies? Do you believe that they are too big and too powerful and should be regulated and downsized forcibly? Remember back in the 80s, what they did to AT&T, broke AT&T up into eight different companies. All of those companies ended up being much stronger than AT&T. And Bell South ended up buying AT&T out of bankruptcy and renamed themselves AT&T. And you know, so it didn't really have the consequences that the government intended. Does Amazon deserve to be broken up? What do you think about the antitrust situation at Amazon?
I believe that I remember that with the telephone companies, Southern Bell, New York, New England Bell. We've in the battery business. We did business with many of those Bell networks around the country, the battery recycling business. But yes, I do. When you look at the bailouts, I was so, you know, disgusted that your country's largest insurance company needed $150 billion to bail them out. I was praying that they would have let them fail and then go back to the 400 or 500 insurance companies they had bought out so that there was actually some competition, you know, and they got 100, and that was the biggest bailout, was the, I forget their name and it doesn't matter anyway, but the biggest insurance company, you know,
AIG.
Been run, they must have been run by a bunch of fools as far as I'm concerned, and greedy pigs, frankly. When they got that bailout, there was big bonuses paid out, and it was the same with General Motors. I mean, they got a huge bailout. I do believe they paid theirs back. And when they let the CEO go, he got a $27 million payout. You know, in the real world, he'd have been fired, I guess. Never mind the $27 million. So, yeah, I do think they should break up some of these big companies. I mean, we've already seen during the 2007-2008, the biggest companies had to be bailed out. If we had those 500 insurance companies back in business instead, that wouldn't have happened. They're better run companies. There is more than just the money side of things involved in running a good business. I don't think they realize that. It's, as I said, it's nameless, faceless. Make as much money as you can. So, yeah, I do believe they should limit the size of these giants. You know, they just have so much power and clout. What do you think happens when one of these guys calls a senator or a governor or the prime minister or president? You know, they've got a lot of clout, Jim. They're thousands and thousands of employees. In Canada, many years ago, the two big nickel producers up in northern Ontario was a very rich vein of nickel. And two large companies at that time, Inco and Falconbridge, since both sold to foreign interests, both those giants. They had their smelters up in Sudbury, Ontario. And they were horribly, horribly polluting the environment. Each company was sending out its stack 2,500 tons of sulfur dioxide a day. I flew into there once to meet one of them for a boatload of mill scale one of the kind of waste byproducts off of making metal, manufacturing metal. And as we were flying in, I said to my friend that I went with, a business associate, geez, why does everything look dead and brown for 50, 60 miles approaching Sudbury? He said, because it is. I said, that's kind of disgusting. Makes me sick to my stomach, really, looking at this. Everything was brown for at least 50 miles around the city. And so, you know, there was a lot of pressure, things changing the environment, the regulation change. They were given 10 years to correct that. 10 years. We had acid rain. We had Algonquin Park, a famous park in Ontario. Acid in the rivers and so forth, and the lakes. You and I would have been given no time to turn that around if we were polluting to that extent. They got 10 years to stop that. So, you know, there's a lot of downsides to companies, people having that much power and that much clout. That's the way I feel about it anyway, Jim. So, yeah, I wish they would break up these big companies. I mean, what's the owner of Amazon? What is he worth, $200 billion now? I mean, just the whole business platform, as I say, they will 5-10 cents at a time, if necessary, will charge you more for the service. It's just the way it goes. And then, of course, once there's enough mom and pops and small retailers out of it, you'll have no choice. You'll have no choice. And then the increase in price will be much more dramatic. You can count on that. They're addicted to money.
In the book, Wayne, I talk a little bit about Bezos and his new yacht. He just bought a 400-foot yacht, and that yacht is so big, but it still is not sufficient to carry all of his stuff that he wants to carry around. So that 400-foot yacht has a 250-foot supply boat that goes everywhere with it. Imagine that a 400-foot yacht is not enough. He has to have a supply boat to carry the submarine and all the toys and the extra food and gas and all of that, and the helicopter landing pad and all of that. So for one person, yeah. He and his girlfriend.
Yeah. Right. Well, listen, I guess, you know, he certainly has the money. So if you have the money, you can do what you like with it. But yeah, I just don't believe that it's good for the country, good for the rest of us, that individual businesses get that big and with that much power, and he can buy as he likes. I got more angst against the people he puts out of business with his giant company and this next day delivery. I certainly understand it from the public's perspective. But it will bite us in the end. You will pay more for every single one of those products. You'll pay for the delivery, too, by the time the smoke clears, because there won't be enough competition for them to worry about once they... When in Canada, during COVID, they did a telephone poll and called a bunch of people, and it was something like 69% of people polled said that they were getting everything they could, including groceries, delivered to their door. The more interesting part was that something like 53 or 57% said they believe they'll continue that after COVID because it's just convenient as heck and reasonable. You don't have to go out in the car. I mean, we're lazier than we used to be, Jim. Fast food places can't survive near as easily unless they have a drive-through. It used to be you pulled up and you had to get out of your car to go inside, but now there's drive-thrus everywhere, so it's not surprising it has come to this that we're addicted to getting things delivered to their door, delivered to our door. I don't think your house is different from that many others where there certainly are daily deliveries, and I also think it can can assist people to spend more money than they might have otherwise. If they start surfing things they'd like to have, it's just pretty easy, I guess, to click on a button and buy it as opposed to going out for it. So I don't know that. It's just my belief, I guess, my feeling that that people are probably spending more buying things that they mightn't have otherwise because it is so easy. But that's good for the economy, you know, so the two sides to every coin.
That's right. You know, the people who built those two yachts for Bezos supported a lot of families. You know, the construction of those yachts were good for the economy there, you know, wherever the yachts were built. I think in Netherlands. And so,
you know, although that yacht will burn some fuel, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yes.
So as far as being fuel efficient, it won't be. I did see a picture of it, but my guess is it's probably 4,000 or 5,000 horsepower, the same as there'd be for most of the Great Lakes freighters that are carrying 25,000 or 30,000 tons. Because old Bezos will be in a hurry. He'll want to get A to Z as fast, A to B as quickly as he can. And a lot of these big yachts are like Navy ships. They'll move pretty quickly, but you're burning fuel like gangbusters and major horsepower in that engine room.
Yes, yes.
So, as I say, there's two sides to every coin, but environmentally, no, you know, they're... Thank goodness there isn't more of them.
Wayne, we kind of need to wrap it up. What else do you have on your mind today? Give us one more of your thoughts.
Well, I'm going to go out into a bunch more stores today in the province of Alberta and talk to the lovely folks and see what I can do for our own small business here and increase sales. I won't be taking any 400-foot yachts or any jet airplanes or anything like that. Jim, I'll be driving my 5-year-old Ford pickup, which I love. Well, Doug, just to finish up, it was driving me crazy. I bought this truck about, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago. I'm sure I'm plowing the miles on it, but it's got one of these systems in it that when you come to a stoplight, shuts the engine off, and when you take your foot off the brake, the engine flashes up again. So I wrote yesterday on Facebook, I said to my mechanic friends out there, is this not going to wear the battery and the starter out quicker? Plus, it's a pain in the neck. The truck kind of jumps ahead when it's in gear and the engine restarts. And I got a bunch of replies that, oh, yeah, it's going to eat starters, and they're over $1,000 for this type of vehicle now. It's in so many vehicles, apparently, this stop and start business, all under the guise of saving fuel and being better for the environment. That's nonsense, absolute nonsense. So what I did find out, the upside was there is a button on the dash you can push, but you have to do it every time you start the car, and it deactivates that system. And if you had it unhooked at the dealership, your warranty's no longer any good. So there is a button that you can push, which I'm pushing every day because it's the most annoying thing. And I know I've got to be wearing out a starter. If you start your car once or twice a day or 75 times a day, it only makes sense that you're going to wear that starter out, and it's tough on the battery. So that's just my last comment as an environmental comment and a pain in the neck. I think it's backfired on them, really, and I hope they take it out because the fuel savings aspect is total nonsense.
Wayne, thank you so much for your weekly input, and I look forward to talking to you next week. Drive safe.
You bet. Thanks. Take care. Thanks.
We are out of time for today, but back tomorrow. Be safe, everyone. Take care. Bye now.